You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants. Featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazzoni. Part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
What a week, Doug. We stopped recording, and within hours, Shohei Ohtani's UCL was torn, and the entire tinge of the offseason changed, color of the offseason changed. And then the Giants went on to still have a good week. Those things are unrelated, but we're going to get to in a minute. They're kind of related. A lot happened in a week. Again, shifting to the Thursday release schedule has changed things somehow. Just different mood.
The vibes are way off. I don't know how much our listeners are able to adapt to this, but I hope you can bear with us as we do a vibe shift. Is that still a phrase? Do people say that? I don't know. I'm too old.
I would say that in terms of us being old, it's still better that we say that versus replying to tweets with GIFs. Okay, so that's really great. Gives away our age. Yeah.
I like that answer. It's on fleek.
The Giants went 3-3. They lost a series to Atlanta, as everyone expected. They won a series against the Reds, which wasn't a surprise, but it would have been nice if they swept. In that, Kyle Harrison made his home debut, and he was fantastic, better than expected, surprised all of us who aren't in the clubhouse and had this thought of like, oh, he's out of there after four innings for sure. And no, he went six innings or into the sixth. Some really intense stuff. Or he went into the seventh. What am I saying? And then we had Alex Cobb nearly pitching a no-hitter the other night. I don't even know where to begin with either of those things because they're both such surprises, welcome surprises. Sort of like, when was the last time the Giants hit their like 99th percentile of expectation? It feels like it's been a while since that happened. So that was great. But
and not just expectations, but actual entertainment.
Yeah, like, that's
usually
true.
A Giants game it's been kind of a slog lately. Like I saw a friend of the podcast, Roger Munter, was on Twitter yesterday, and he had a screenshot of Sam Miller's Substack where someone wrote in to say, is the Giants versus the Reds the battle of the most boring team in baseball versus the least boring team? And like, I can see where they're coming from. The Giants are not objectively that exciting. And then Kyle Harrison shows up and he's incredibly exciting. And then they almost throw a no hitter the next night. So I'm like, all right, Giants are back. Unrealistic expectations are back. We're doing this. I want to watch this team. And then they lost 4-1.
Yeah. in a big wet fart of a game.
Yeah.
A game we've seen all too much. I guess stick a pin on the entertainment value notion just for a second, but the Giants are going to finish this month with the losing record, either 12-15 or 11-16, but their playoff odds are still above 50%, Doug. So we got to look at it this way. August was a huge test. Can the Giants hang with some of the best teams in the league? Perhaps like the best teams in the league, the four best. No, they can't. They failed the test miserably. It was the midterms, an absolute failure. But they might be able to get enough extra credit work in to still pass the class and make the playoffs. And that's what September is becoming. Now I'm going to return to your point about entertaining. I contend that this is what we will come out with. Strikeouts are good and entertaining if it's from a pitcher. And bad and it's boring if it's from a hitter. And that's it. That's all baseball has been boiled down to. When hitters strike out, it's bad. When pitchers get strikeouts, it's good. That's it. Because it's going to have to come down to what we've said. The Giants are going to have to just pitch shutouts every night. But the good news is they have a core of arms where that might actually be plausible. Not probable, but certainly plausible. But let's talk a little bit about that Alex Cobb, that near miss. On a very clear strike into the right center field gap. Gregor Blanco, just being the right, having the glove on his right hand, maybe he would have dived and made the catch several years ago. I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. But Alex Cobb, we've seen him have that kind of stuff. He had 8 strikeouts in 9 innings. But we've seen him have that kind of movement on his pitches, and it just didn't go away. He had it all night, and that was the key to the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, watching Cobb on Tuesday, he looked like the best version of himself, and then he maintained it. And that was sort of the impressive thing, because we've seen him do it for 5 or 6 innings and then maybe get in the 7th, and then Kapler takes him out. You know, the pitch count's too high or he starts to look tired. But, you know, on that near no-hitter, he blew way past his career high for pitches in a game. I think he was at it in the 8th inning or at the end of the 8th inning, and he went out and had a reasonably long 9th inning where he gave up 2 base runners. You wouldn't expect him to still have it at that point, but he did. It's disappointing to lose a no-hitter after getting the first 26 outs without giving up a hit. But it's, you know, he had a great game. It was fun to watch, and I was excited to see it.
131 pitches. This is two starts removed from pitching, from throwing 103 pitches. And then before that, he had 103 pitches back at the beginning of June. And then he had a few more times before that this season. He had the back-to-back starts. I had forgotten about this. Back-to-back starts where he threw over 100 pitches. And look, it's Alex Cobb. That's he had a shutout where he threw 109 pitches. I think it just kind of along the lines of what we used to hear in the old days about like the Derek Lowe's of the world, like sinker ballers. It's okay because they're sinker ballers. And last night, I know that one of the keys to Cobb's success, and actually wound up, I believe, is what the Reds got the hit on, was his splitter was working really well last night. And also there was some, you know, the old conventional wisdom was that the sinker would affect your fastball as well. Splitter would affect your fastball as well. I don't know about all that. I do know that Alex Cobb has velocity, but also movement, and his movement was just off the charts. It was just beautiful to behold. I'm glad we got to see it. What does it mean going forward? The Mets broadcast, I think yesterday, they were admonishing the Giants for letting him throw so many pitches. I think between Cobb and Kyle Harrison, who we will be talking about, don't worry, that in this past week, one thing we saw the Giants do was be a little old school with their pitchers. And I guess if you want to look at that as some sort of, bending to appease cranky fans who are grumpy about the team's hitting and all that stuff, or, you know, whatever. It's just like, I think it's just, if the guy looks good and he's healthy, just you let him go is like probably a broader conventional wisdom that even the analytics people can go with. He looked great. You want him to have the accomplishment. I'm sure there's a measure of vibes now, Doug. in the clubhouse. Yes. And, you know, yes. And the X joy on Alex Cobb getting a no hitter was worth the risk there. It was, you know, what was amazing about it though, was when he lost the no hitter, you could see the adrenaline just completely sabotage his performance. It was fantastic. The stuff just like, he looked like he lost his breath. That was pretty great. But, I would say when you're close to these types of accomplishments, it's worth it. I think everyone gets it. Those are the times where the analytics saber people, which it's so weird to like make these distinctions now. This has been the mode of baseball for over 20 years now. We're in it. There's no like one way or the other. But it's just like, it's clear if you've been skeptical for 20 years about Moneyball, like at this point, it's like it's part of the game, but also they're not so stupid as to say we're going to deny a veteran a chance to throw a no-hitter. So I'm glad they gave him that chance.
The point of watching sports is to see cool and fun stuff. I mean, I don't want to get too technical here, but that's what we're all in it for, you know? So to see a guy, to look at a guy who's, you know, throwing a bunch of pitches but could throw a no-hitter, you let him go for the no-hitter. Like, whatever. Who cares? Watch the game, nerds. Take that, Ron Darling. But yeah, I mean, it's, I have no problem with letting a guy, with letting Alex Cobb go for it there. Like, it does not matter, you know? The Giants are not that good of a team for it to sabotage their World Series hopes, even if it goes catastrophically wrong. They have already sabotaged their World Series hopes. Give people something to remember. Like 2015, kind of a lost season. I think the Giants went 84-78, if I'm remembering right. Chris Heston threw a no-hitter. That's incredible. That's so cool. Like, we're always going to remember. Yeah, remember when Chris Heston threw that no-hitter? You give a guy a chance to do that. Like, that's the whole point of the sport. So I was excited to see it. I will never have a problem with letting a guy go for a no-hitter in the ninth when his pitch count is, like, a little high. It's fine.
Also, remember Captain Kirk's speech, risk is our business. That's what this starship is all about. That's why we're aboard her. That's why you play the game. Hey, all you Golden State Warriors fans out there, you got to tune in to the Oakland Warriors podcast, the official Dubs podcast of Fans First Sports Network. It's awesome. It's hosted by Patrick Epino and a rotating crew of guests who follow this franchise for decades, just like Doug and I have with the Giants. The show dives deep into all things Warriors, both on the court and off. Will the Dubs be legit contenders this year? Is Steve Kerr actually going to play Jonathan Kuminga enough to have a breakout year? Will the Chris Paul trade be a blessing or a curse? I'm very interested to know that myself. And most importantly, can Steph win another title? Or maybe two? The show takes an all-encompassing look at the greatest team in the NBA. No hot takes, no agendas, no bluster, and no goofy knee-jerk reactions. Just smart, insightful Warriors talk about the past, present, and future from one of the best in the business. Tune in and subscribe to the People's Podcast, the Oakland Warriors Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube at youtube.com/Oakland Warriors. Let's go! Let's get into something wackier. This is worth talking about. We're forming most of the show about, which is funny because in just a few hours, it could potentially be completely moot. But we got to talk about it. Because you can no longer make August waiver trades claims because of the new trade deadline being a hard out. You can make trades if they're not a part of your 40-man roster. So you can trade minor leaguers. That includes 30-year-olds who, you know, might be on minor league deals. But if they're on your 40-man major league deals, you cannot make trades in August, clearing waivers, whatever. The loophole is you can just put a guy on waivers like you're going to release him and teams can claim him, or he'll get released and then sign with another team. Now, that's the loophole that the Angels are hoping to exploit, because they released multiple players just 2 days ago. And this morning, the waiver order, like your fantasy team, will be determined on the record as of this morning. And so whoever put in claims based on the record as of this morning will be awarded the player. Okay, so there are some other guys that were released before the Angels did their dump. Josh Donaldson from the Yankees, just a notable one there. Carlos Carrasco. Here are the others. From the Angels, Lucas Giolito, Hunter Renfro, Randall Grichuk, Matt Moore, and Reynaldo Lopez. And then the Yankees released their center fielder, Harrison Bader, whom they traded for last year from the Cardinals, who's hitting terribly, just absolutely below Aaron Rowan levels. And Jose Cisnero, on the Tigers, he was also placed on waivers as well. So I've listed all the guys I think are ones the Giants should be looking at. Doug, what are your thoughts on the loopholes, this whole situation, the outrage that this is like somehow anti-competitive, all that stuff? What first thought?
I mean, it is lame as shit for the Angels. Like, that's you really can't get around that. That they're like, hey, you know these guys who are okay but making a bunch of money, well, we're gonna release them, and then that'll tinker with some draft pick bullshit. And instead of getting a fourth round pick for losing Shohei Ohtani this offseason, we're gonna get a second round pick.
Right. So the deals, if they're all claimed, they will dance back under the luxury tax threshold. So that's definitely the main reason why they're doing it. And if when Ohtani signs elsewhere, because they did not exceed the luxury tax, they will not be penalized for the draft pick compensation type that they receive for Ohtani leaving. The other argument, though, I guess, is like some of these guys maybe. Well, I mean, the PR answer is, well, these guys also now have a chance to join a playoff team.
That's technically true.
Yes.
I actually don't understand why they just got rid of August waiver trades. August waiver trades were fine. Like, it's such a weird move. Like, anyway, no more trades. You now have to have players move through a completely different arcane system full of dumb bullshit. I don't really get it. But
I know why. I have an answer.
Yeah.
Craig Goldstein, the editor of Baseball Prospectus, like, he was lamenting about this yesterday too, but it all boils down to this. Every GM or president of baseball operations guy, we've talked about this, we've joked about this, lamented this, but also complimented this for Far Anxiety, is a great risk manager. So all these guys have been hired because of the way they've been able to market themselves to the hiring bodies as how good they are at managing risk. And what do they do when they finally get enough of like a critical mass of similar thinking? Is they change the rules to make it easier for them to limit risk. It's just laziness, Doug. That's all it is. It's like, let's take the danger out of any of our moves and we can keep being smarter. That did make me think that there is a non-zero. There's a possibility today we could see all these smarties look at themselves, like stand around and no one make a claim. Because we could see that happen. It would be very bizarre if they did that. Now, if the Angels, if no one claims them, I think the Angels keep them because they played in their games. So they didn't release them. If they just released them, they would owe them the salary and then the guys could sign elsewhere. But they place them on waivers specifically so that guys can be claimed and then the full salaries can be absorbed by the claiming team. You got a bunch of teams like that are ahead of the Giants in the standing order. By the way, you might remember the waiver order as being determined by the league. So like an Angels player, it's based in the reverse order of like the American League. Well, that's not the case anymore. It's just record across the whole both leagues. I guess it only comes down to if there's a tie, then the tiebreaker is the league. So the Giants, I think they are 69-64. The Reds are ahead of them. The Marlins are ahead of them. And I think the Twins and the Red Sox are also ahead of them. And that's like ahead of them in that those teams have worse records. So they are both in the wild card or division hunts. And so would have higher waiver claim access for any of these players. The Marlins, Reds, and Diamondbacks, I didn't mention them, but they're in there too. They're all teams. Oh, and the Twins. They're all teams that were affected by the regional sports network bankruptcies that have been going on. So there's like an actual legitimate financial quote unquote reason they could throw out there that affects them. But we really are just talking about like Hunter Renfro, I think, has the most left on his deal, $2.2 million for the last 30 games of the season, last month of the season. But like Lucas Giolito, who is a starter the Giants could use, I think. 1.925, Randall Grichuk's 1.9, Matt Moore, old friend alert, 1.4 million. You know, these are like more than the prorated major league minimum over the last month of the season, but they are still effectively trivial numbers. For a lot of them, for a lot of the teams, these are like game day takes. So you would get it all back in a playoff scenario, right? You would be investing this money to then get it back on playoff gate that you'd have tickets and concessions and parking. All that said, Doug, isn't it easy to imagine, given the climate of front offices today, to imagine everyone going, why would we help the Angels out?
I do think there's a couple of those guys that will get claimed. I think Giolito will get claimed, and possibly Grichuk too. I think Grichuk's at least been fine this year.
Grichuk's been terrible since the trade to the Angels.
Yeah.
He was good with the Rockies. The Giants do have 7 games against the Rockies, including 4 in Colorado, where he had a 945 OPS. Just putting that out there. That was in 32 games.
But like Renfro hasn't had a good year. I mean, I really, they're all, other than I think Matt Moore, who was weirdly good, and I'm not going to trust that. We've been burned before by him. Am I right? I think they're all kind of having disappointing years, which makes sense because they're on the Angels. The Angels fell apart, especially after Giolito got traded there. And Giolito's ERA is in the high 6s since he's been in the Angels. But like you look at that and I think there will be someone who sees talent that they might be able to use. And the Giants are in a good position. I would be surprised if the Giants didn't put in a claim on one or two of them. I mean, they're messing around with AJ Pollock, then they could give Randall Grichuk a shot. They have 3 real starters right now, plus maybe Tristan Beck, depending on what they're going to do with him. I could see them giving Giolito a shot.
Giolito would help them. He has strikeout stuff, which they, outside of Harrison in the rotation, quote unquote, not there. You know, he's like at a 9-something strikouts per 9, which is great. About Renfro, he homered yesterday. He has 19 on the season. He has 30 doubles. His OPS plus is like 94, 95. I get it. That's not good, but that's better than what the Giants have. And I don't understand why suddenly a lot of fans who love everything the team does, the Giants are being offered a series of Paul DeJongs. So these are marginal DeJong. Up. Yeah, Paul's DeJong. This is the one time where we can do the attorney's general joke, because that's correct. These are all Paul's DeJong. They fall into the same category of marginal upgrades that will not cost you anything except money. So I would say that the only cynical reason why you would, I mean, if you're a fan arguing for if the team does nothing, and I agree with you, they've got to claim one of these guys. And we're going to talk about in just a second why one might be all they could afford to claim. It's not because of money, but I would have to say that if you don't see all these guys claimed, it is because of money. Maybe not just in the case of the Giants, but certainly all the guys. These guys are making, for the rest of the season, for teams that are trying to make it into the playoffs, this any one of these guys could help your team get into the playoffs, and then one playoff game pays for him. So it's like, I don't get it. Like, Hunter Renfro is a right-handed power hitter, so his power will not be killed by Oracle Park. He is a National League guy for the most part. He played for the Padres for 4 years, played for the Rays 1 year in the COVID year. He played for the Red Sox and he did fine there. He played for the Brewers just last year. You know, his slugging is better than what they have. He can actually also play the field, unlike Jock Peterson. The Grichuk
can he? Yeah, his defense is why Baseball Reference has him as a below replacement level player this year.
Grichuk is worse, is kind of what I was getting at on defense. The guy, if they're really going to pick anybody, I mean, if we're going to pick someone for hitting, I'm going to go with Renfro. If we're going to pick someone for defense, I'm going to go with Harrison Bader. Because that guy's defense in center field is elite. And I don't know, I would roll the dice that you could figure out a way to make him hit slightly better than Luis Matos. and be a little bit better that way. Why not just keep Luis Matos on the roster? Harrison Bader is he's plus +8 outs above average in center field, Doug. That is an elite defender in center at a key position. So I'm enamored of him. The pitching, Giolito, I can see I can just imagine he'll get claimed before the Giants have a chance to claim him. But between Ronaldo Lopez and Jose Cisnero, I think either one of those guys, hopefully the Giants claim one of them. I think they'd both be great. Cisnero, he's got the sinker slider, and Ronaldo is the four-seam slider guy. But, you know, 101 with his fastball, like high average velocity there. Cisnero, though, that's a guy that can, like, let's just turn him into another John Brebbia. Bink! And then they'll have John's Brebbia on the roster. But, all right, so who do you think they will get? Because I'm sure, or who do you think they'll claim and who do you think they'll get?
I mean, I definitely think they'll claim Giolito. I'm a little wary of them claiming any relievers. I don't know, because, you know, Brebbia is going to be back soon. I just don't see the spot on the roster for them. It's hard to see. I think they like the construction of the bullpen. So to get an underperforming guy like Cisnero, who should be good, was very good last year, had been good before that, has been pretty bad this year, with a lot of last year he walked a ton of guys, but this year he's giving up a bunch of homers, I think. You know, they have guys who give up too many homers already. They want another one. Do they think they can fix him in a month? That's a little iffy. I mean, Matt Moore is objectively the best reliever available.
Yes.
Farhan was not personally responsible for anything that happened when Matt Moore was in San Francisco. So he might not have the same baggage with him that, let's say, I do. I don't know that they're going to go for him. And Matt Moore probably will get picked up before the Giants have a shot.
Moore's been good.
I can't imagine a lefty with good stuff having an excellent year is going to make it all the way to the Giants. There's, you know, four teams clustered right with them who are going to want to give him a shot. You have to think he's going to go to one of those teams.
Well, I want to bring up this point about what can they do to a guy in 30 days? I mean, if the Giants are trying to be the Dodgers got Lance Lynn and literally like pressed the button and Lance Lynn was suddenly back to being a solid starting pitcher. So you have to think or expect that they would be able to do that with any acquisition. And if that's a reason to argue against it, then I don't know what the fuck we're doing here, because I thought the whole goal was to make one good baseball move after another and use every advantage to make up any improvement to the roster, even if they're marginal upgrades. And I look at this list of guys and I see marginal upgrades.
Yeah, baby. We're in business now. Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument for both, I think, Renfro and Grichuk as pieces of the roster. I don't know if you can make an argument for them as objectively like upgrades over Luis Matos, but maybe the Giants will think differently. I could see them putting in a claim on one of them.
Totally.
And if I'm thinking of one, it's the other one. Because I don't know what they're thinking. But like, I could see it. I could also see them not liking whatever's going on with their swings. I could see them I could see them having some doubts that they're not going to obviously be open about publicly.
Sure. I mean, but ultimately it will feel a lot more like, oh, there's some weird money issue going on. Like the Giants are too close to the salary tax line or whatever. But this is a move that 2 weeks ago, there would be no question, like any one of these guys they would add. They would probably put in claims on all of them and they'd just figure it out. But suddenly everyone's weird after a 3-3 week. And suddenly everyone's very precious about the smart front office getting their guys together. Oh, they just had one bad game where they lost 4-1. No, they've been a bad offense for almost 3 months. They're not. It's like any improvement you can get, you should take. All that said, new segment. How the hell would they fit any of these guys onto the roster? Even if they claimed and they want a claim on one of these players, it's going to take all of our anxieties, Excel spreadsheeting, juggling to make this work, because even if they don't get anybody, the roster crunch is real. Even with the roster expansion happening tomorrow, it can only go up to 28. So 28 active players. Well, the Giants currently have 5 players set to return. One of those is on the 60-day IL, John Brebbia. So he'll have to actually then be moved back onto the 40-man, which is currently full. So they've got to make room on the 40-man, and then they've got to make 5 roster spots on the 28-man. And I don't know. Any thoughts on that, Doug?
I mean, the spot on the 40-man, I think, is pretty trivial because A.J. Pollock still has a spot on the 40-man. Whether they do that the mean way by releasing him or by just transferring him to the 60-day IL, either way, that's easy to get Brebbia on. A spot, you know, if you need a spot, an extra spot on the active roster, if you get an outfielder, you can probably send down Wade Mechler. You know, he had a good week, but they can send him down very easily. In terms of other 40-man spots, I mean, I think Brett Wisely is pretty expendable at this point.
You think?
Yeah, I do think that.
I also think Sean Jelly and David Villar are also expendable.
Yeah, exactly.
And Alex Wood could be released.
They seem like they don't want to do that.
Yeah, so that was going to be my point about A.J. Pollock, because between he and Alex Wood, we're now past the point of no return where they could release those guys and those guys could sign with another team in time to join, being part of the organization to be eligible for the playoffs. It seems like it'd be a real bastard move to jerk around Alex Wood all year and then release him after he can't join the Dodgers. But maybe that's exactly what the Giants want to avoid. And they're trying to prevent that, and they're fine with pissing off Alex Wood. But the Pollock thing, the other part of it is not just what I said, but also, I mean, let's not forget here that this is still, you know, competition, and there's going to be a pride element of Zaidi where, this was his only deadline move and it died. Like, he released the guy. He's just paying him $2.5 million to go away. I just don't see that happening. It could.
I mean, I think the argument would be if you get Hunter Renfroe or Randall Grichuk, that's the better version of
or Giolito.
And
that's the only way to make him fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Specifically, though, like with the outfielders, you know, we wanted to give an outfielder who's been good a shot. Well, now we have an outfielder who's been good more recently. We're going to give him a shot instead. I think that's how you kind of justify that. Giolito, I think, is a legitimate roster need. So you just do whatever you have to do there. And, you know, you let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. So another part of that, you just reminded me another thing, because if they don't do anything, like if we find out they didn't make any claims, I'm going to blow a gasket. It's so hot in LA right now, everyone. I'm just like, we have no AC. I'm like losing my mind. So I'm spiraling out of control here in some cases, but like if they don't make any claims, and I'm sure they will, but if they don't, it's going to be very maddening because it's exactly what you just said, Doug. We've got a bunch of guys on the roster who haven't been able to play. If you're Mitch Haniger, even Michael Conforto, Mike Yastrzemski. And so the idea that the Giants would look at these other players who are available, who are not like lighting the world on fire, they're not amazing players, but they're objectively on paper upgrades of guys, and they've been playing more recently, the idea that you would table that and prefer the imagined potential of guys who've let you down all year because they can't play, that would drive me insane. That would be infuriating. We signed Mitch Haniger knowing he's a huge injury risk, but what if he wasn't? Meanwhile, Hunter Renfroe is hitting almost 30 home runs a year, but he's up to 20 already this year, or close to it. No. The imagined potential is better. Like it just drives me nuts. So Brebbia has to come back, Crawford, Ross Stripling, Michael Conforto, AJ Pollock. Those are the guys on the IL. The 28, for me, to get to 28 seems pretty easy because they're already on the 10-day IL. You got Brandon Crawford and Ross Stripling, probably. Stripling's on the 15. But I imagine like those are two pretty easy spots. I don't know who's actually scheduled to come back first between Crawford and Michael Conforto. I would assume it's Crawford. And then What about Keaton Wynn? He's back in pitching, right?
Is he back in pitching?
I thought he was back in pitching, but I mean, that's a potential guy that if he is pitching, you're going to want to have him. Didn't mention this. We don't know what the state of Luciano's injury is. It would be a shame, but also the minor league season's nearing the end anyway. They could 60-day IL him as well, and that could open up a spot.
Yeah. So that's all on the table. Yeah, so you're right. Keaton Wynn is back in pitching. Honestly, it does seem like the guy who's most likely who you would think on a performance basis is most likely to go is Alex Wood. But again, huge dick move. Would they do it anyway? I don't know. They did release Jeff Samardzija on the last day of the 2018 or 2019 season, the last day of his contract, to get some other guy on the roster for in a completely lost season. So that was 2019. I think it was Farhan's first year. Yeah. It's the weirdest move I've ever seen. So, you know, that's on the table.
It would be sick. You would know that they have a thing against Alex Wood if they won the claim from Matt Moore and then released Alex Wood to get Matt Moore.
Oh man, that is big sickos energy right there.
Yeah, and then I was thinking, you know, I mentioned David Villar, but it's also like, you know, come to think of it, their third base depth is actually pretty shallow. It's basically Casey Schmidt and JD Davis and David Villar. I guess Wilmer Flores too, but it's basically those guys. So I don't know if that would happen. But also, don't forget, they could maybe phantom IL a couple of guys. What's going on with Luke Jackson? Tyler Rogers hasn't looked quite right. You know, there's ways to make it happen. All right. That was kind of fun. And it, also, this segment's going to be moot in like literally hours, but it was worth talking about.
So we hope you listen to it on time.
That's right. Kyle Harrison. Let's talk about him for a few minutes. That was exciting. Did you ever think you would live to see the Giants once again having a guy like that? I didn't.
No. It really felt like it was never going to happen again. Like the best we were ever going to get out of the Giants farm system was a bunch of Joe Panics. And I was like, that's fine. That's okay. I don't mind. I like Joe Panic. So that's good. Just give us like four new ones every year and we're okay. And then they didn't give us four new ones every year. And then in 2023, we got Kyle Harrison. So it all worked out.
11 strikeouts and then 2 walks. So middle finger to the automated strike zone in minor leagues. Some complaints, I guess, or concerns that he pitched, you know, threw so many pitches, pitched so many innings where he hadn't pitched more than 5 innings in what, at least since last year. Certainly exceeded his pitch count and all that. According to Andy Baggerly, they were getting ready to ramp up his pitch count. Excuse me, before he had his, his hamstring injury. And so that actually delayed it. But, you know, literally 2 major league starts in, they're like, oh, you're fine. Now you're stretched out. Go for it. I mean, I guess the thought I had while watching it, because his fastball looked crisp and all that and looked great deep into the game. I like that he's trying a changeup. That's cute. And he calls his slurve or sweeper a slider. Great. Whatever, man, whatever works, go for it. But what could also be happening is, you know, the Giants could just be at risk evaluating and saying it's more valuable if he throws more of his pitches in the major leagues. And it could be as simple as that.
Yeah. I mean, it could even be simpler than that. It could be he was feeling good. Let's see what he's got. Like,
you know, they were saying that the weather for that series, do you remember the broadcast? Like, great weather. They're like, where's the hitting, though? Like, that kind of thing. Maybe the weather was, like, perfect pitching conditions.
Yeah, it could be.
Just everyone felt really good. Was there a favorite moment of yours that you had from the game? I have one. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I can cut it out if you don't.
I think, obviously, he started out with 5 straight strikeouts. Like, when you do that, that's sort of the excitement factor. Like, it just builds with everyone, right? You're like, I don't want to make another noise because then we'll have to slap an adults only rating on this podcast. But it's like, it was just, you were watching him kind of mouth open. Like, when's the last time I saw anything like this from a Giants pitcher? Tim Lincecum? Like, as great as Bumgarner was, absolutely no shade on Bumgarner, obviously, but like he never did it with like the blow away strikeout stuff, guy after guy after guy. Yeah. So just watching that happen, it was incredible. It was like, oh, this is for real. This is like a top prospect. This is why everyone else the Giants have ever had never cracked the top 40 on the top prospects list, because they couldn't do something like this.
It a little bit did have more of a Lincecum feel, but there was also sort of an effortlessness to it that reminded me of just last season with Carlos Rodon. Like there was just that element with his fastball, but in terms of just like, and then he strikes out Ellie De La Cruz with his sweeper, which De La Cruz looked completely broken down. That was great. I love that his mom picked him up after the game. She gave him such a big hug. That was cool. Yeah. Very exciting stuff. The Giants adding another player in their arsenal of guys you want to see. And that's really great. So between Webb and Cobb and Harrison, that is a really solid front three. And then if you do add Tristan Beck into the mix, which we should, and even Sean Manaea is pitching well as like your bulk guy, that's going to get you through a 5-game series pretty easily, to say nothing of a 3-game wildcard series. But that's a good start. And obviously we're putting a lot of pressure on Harrison right away, but at least my being an old man, my experience of like, well, most of the league hasn't seen him. So at least the first time through, he has the advantage. And maybe that's true. But, all of your plans are as good as the first encounter with the enemy, right? In this case, how will he do against Mookie Betts? but really cool. Really cool. I cannot wait for his next start, which will be next week, which we'll talk about in a minute. But before then, Doug, what's something else you found interesting about the Giants this past week? We already talked about Kyle Harrison, so it's got to be something else.
They're finally getting a little BABIP luck, which is nice. Wade Mechler and Austin Slater are finally having balls drop in, and you can absolutely fool yourself into thinking that they're better than they are now, because hey, you hit 667 over a week. I'm not looking at the 800 BABIP. but it's also kind of a proof of what their games can be, and that they're not completely overwhelmed at the major league level. Like Mechler looked like he might be, and Slater had looked since the All-Star break. Sometimes balls just don't fall in, and that doesn't mean you're bad at baseball now. Balls have started to fall in for them. And they're both also doing pretty well with play discipline. Over the last week, both of them have walked more than they've struck out, which is really exciting. That's what the Giants want to see. That's what you want to see kind of as a fan, because as we've already mentioned, strikeouts as a hitter are boring. So to see them doing what they're supposed to do and also get the results for it has been a lot of fun.
I thought it was very interesting that you could smell the concessions as you came up on McCovey Cove, because this weekend I got on a boat and went around the San Francisco Bay, and actually for the first time in my life got to sit in a boat during a game in McCovey Cove, and it was incredible. So like in this past month, I've done two things with this stadium I've never done before, and both things just made me fall in love with the place even more. It's not like I had to do it all over again. It's not like Oracle Park had fallen out of favor in my mind. I cherish the place. I love it. I think it's beautiful. Seeing a game from that direction was fantastic. And really, as we were creeping up on it, as we were dropping out of warp and entering the star system, like the food smell was very strong. I thought that was very interesting. And I get it. I get what the seagulls are all about, because when the smell goes away, that's when they appeared. It was pretty interesting. Anyway, anything else?
I mean, we've already hit most of the big highlights. I do kind of want to give a shout out to Ryan Walker again. I like Ryan Walker. That's it. I just like Ryan Walker. Brian, what's something you found concerning this week?
I'm going to push back on your interesting with my concerning. This lineup isn't ready for prime time yet, and it's a little bit frustrating to imagine what I already said, which is that the Giants might be looking at their injured players and their rookies and think it's better to risk the next 30 games on them than any of these guys available on the waiver wire. I mean, Randall Grichuk, Hunter Renfro, why am I even entertaining these guys? It's because the Giants lineup is still so bad. So I'm very concerned that the Giants being as bad as they've been is making me think about guys I wouldn't ordinarily. You know, you kind of wrote about this last week, actually, that the Giants might be smart, but so what?
Yeah.
Which isn't the same as like they might be too smart for their own good. But it's sort of like you've highlighted all the like the positives, but it's still the case that over the last 2 months, now you keep moving the dates, like they're no longer the 30th offense in MLB. They're now the 29th, but woo! Just above the...
We did it! Mission accomplished!
But they're down there with non-playoff teams, one of those being the Angels. So then why would you go and grab one or two Angels? Great point. Great point, the guy I just made up in my head. But the point is that the lineup is getting better, measurably better, but is it getting noticeably better? And if you say, well, I only pay attention to the numbers, therefore measurably is the same as noticeably, I would say entertainment-wise, still not that dynamic. It's just concerning because it feels a lot like they have the potential to limp into the postseason or get into the wild card round. And it's still going to kind of be like what happened against the Dodgers and the NLDS, where the Giants can scheme and platoon, but it's going to ultimately fall on, oh, the other team just has more talent, which is exactly what you wrote. But it just seems like, can you honestly expect the same group to suddenly magically get better this season? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many people saying they could just hit to their career averages. Well, they haven't all year. Maybe they're just having a down year. It happens. But why are we sitting there going, well, we just got to hope that they turn around? And you drawing out these things of what could be good, these are all things that are useful, I think, for next year, even though there's a great article in FanGraphs about how maybe, you know, StatCast is not necessarily predictive towards next year. It's like an interesting data point for projections. But to me, it's like, it is helpful to know, is this guy toast? Or is there still something there? Which I don't need that for like, to know how much it could help them next year. It's just like, oh, Michael Conforto back from surgery, playing full time. Yeah, there's still baseball in there. Now, is it going to be $18 million worth? Probably not. Is Austin Slater a non-tender candidate? I don't know. It's still kind of on the fence. But everything you're pointing out that you've mentioned the last two episodes, Doug, it's like, yeah, there's still something there. And maybe he really did just go through a rough patch. And then with rookies are rookies. And we're going to get what we get from them this year, and that's fine. So I'm still concerned because I don't think this lineup is – I mean, the Giants will literally be playing in primetime if they make the wild card. And I think they're just going to embarrass themselves, more likely than not. Anyway.
Oh, the Giants always embarrass themselves.
Fair enough. Anything that concerned you this past week?
I wouldn't say this is the past week because he didn't get a lot of playing time, but just over the last month, man, Blake Sable's been really bad, and the Giants are just kind of writing it out because they want to keep him in the organization. Like, there's really no way around it. He had a good July because he hit some homers, which homers are great, don't get me wrong, but his June was very bad, and his August has been god-awful. He's been... The last couple months, his walk percentage has been below 5% both months, and he has struck out more than 35% of the time.
Ouch.
In August, he has a weighted runs created plus of 24, and it's noticeable when you watch him. He does not have an extra base hit this month. The thing that he's supposed to be good at is, you know, the power. Like, you take some strikeout to get some power. There's been lots of strikeouts and no power. The Giants are, I think, pretty clearly hiding him by having Patrick Bailey just be the starter now. He probably shouldn't be on the roster, but the Giants don't have a choice if they want to keep him around. So, I mean, that's, I don't want to call it a waste of a spot, but it really is noticeable how they're getting no production at all from the backup catcher spot.
And when he does catch, they're getting blown out.
Yeah. So, not fun.
No. What might be fun is this weekend in San Diego, where the Giants will be playing four games. And I think it'll be fun and a little scary because – we're going to get a chance to see these guys up close. This team that on paper, you know, was destined for greatness. We're going to get a front row seat to seeing just what the hell happened. We're going to be able to like do like a forensic analysis of what happened to the Padres. And then are they going to like be the Joker and claim one of these waiver guys just because, like, we're not sure we're in it, but maybe we could be. You know what I mean? You know, we don't know.
I was thinking it'd be pretty funny if the Mets claimed all of them. I think they should for it.
I'm hoping the Marlins just decide to claim all of them. I think that'd be cool. I mean, but also it would be objectively funny if the Nationals or the Mets or the Padres just like, just do it. Let's do it. And just use the power of spite to finish off their season, which I respect greatly. Doug, will you be writing anything spiteful about the Giants this week, do you think?
Everything I write is spiteful, Brian. And you can find it at giantsdoug.substack.com, where I write every Tuesday and Thursday. Hey, one of those days today, about the Giants. Brian, where can people find you?
You can read my sun-bleached writings at mccoveychronicles.com. We're part of Fans First Sports Network. FansFirstSports.com. Fans First SN on Twitter. And you can follow us on Twitter at Giants Croncast. We're still going to do a mailbag at the end of the year. So send us your questions, add us there at Giants Croncast. Also, next week, we're going to be doing our Bullpen Trust Power Rankings. And Doug, I have a prediction about that. There's going to be some movement on that list.
There's going to be some movement. Yeah. Yeah. I'm still mad about some events from the middle of this month. So
I feel like I need to re-up my Tyler Rogers statement, because it sounds like the Giants really do need to be negged. And Tyler Rogers is a great mascot player to have on a rebuilding team, which the Giants very well could be. And he just might be one of those inspirational guys. It's like, how's he doing it? Good thing I'm more talented than him. And then when the team is good, a guy like him just goes away. Hopefully that motivates him. But anyway, until next week.
Go Giants!